Due to the often controversial content of our show, we strongly recommend that children, asshats, jerkwads, close-minded individuals, bigots, and people unable to accept those who are different than themselves do not listen to the Conduit Cast. Thank you. And for those of you still here, enjoy the show.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Conduit Cast. First, before we get started, I wanted to say a few things about a few people. My partner Michelle, you suck. it's been a long time, and you had a conversation not too long ago with a good friend of the show, artist and musician Tom, TJY, as we like to call him, about personal ghost experiences, personal hauntings. And Michelle is busy trying to edit down more than 2 hours of conversation into a segment for the show. So we'll see how long that takes. Also, I wanted to congratulate another good friend, Jason B. He was on the show a while back with our Children in Horror roundtable. Jason just tied the knot with his longtime girlfriend, fiance, and now wife. And I wanted to congratulate both of you. And the other person I wanted to just say thank you to is a friend and a real dedicated listener, Paula. And she knows who she is. Her and I talk a lot of horror, and she recently picked up Dawning and has loved every minute of it, shared it with her little sister over the weekend. And Paula, your package is in the mail, just so you know. And then finally, just wanted to go back to my dear friend Tom, who recently celebrated a birthday. Wish you happy birthday, bud. And sadly, I wanted to just say that I'm going to miss you, buddy. You're going offline for a while, and Tom has a really unique and exciting opportunity that obviously he's taking, and we wish him the very best. A wonderful friend, great artist, musician, a big source of inspiration. Your friendship is valued more than you'll ever know, and wish you an incredibly enriching and eventful trip. So without further ado, we'll get on with the show. It's probably going to be a little short today, kind of in the middle of doing my absolute worst to multitask today. So the first thing I wanted to get into and talk about is my little adventure that I recently had. You can find it over on theconduitspeaks.com as well. Something I called Theater of Pain, which was my attempt at going headlong into the summer blockbuster season. And as many of you already know, I am not by any means a fan of the Hollywood system, the big budget blockbuster. So I set out to watch back to back, six films, and I did it. It was quite painful, and to say the least, and it consisted of films like Cars 2, Green Lantern, Super 8. The hell, it'd be nice if I came prepared, wouldn't it? Transformers 3, you know, all those, you know, big summer sequel blockbuster type of films. And it took me quite a while to find a theater where I could actually swing this and make it happen. And ended up having to drive quite a distance to get this perfect storm rolling and happening. But back to back, as I said, went from one film to another. And it was quite an experience to say the least. I really wasn't altogether prepared for, I guess, how it made me feel physically and emotionally. I've been to film festivals and, watched a couple films in a row, gone off, done something, come back, watched a couple more. And for the most part, when those situations arose, they were films that I was already interested in, or at least curious about, wanted to see. And this was not the case, so it did make it quite a bit more difficult. There were thoughts that I had about actually, doing the theater hopping thing and really sticking it to the man, but I decided better of that. So I completed that journey, and what was really interesting about it was the way the films lined up. I had Cars 2 first, Super 8, Green Lantern, Thor, X-Men First Class, and then Transformers 3. So I essentially left my house around 8:45 in the morning and pulled into my garage about 3:15 the following morning. There were some matinee prices involved, obviously. So altogether, it cost me just under $50 to see these 8 films. And you can see my exact thoughts and ratings on the Theater of Pain post on the conduitspeaks.com. But I just wanted to kind of share that with those of you who haven't read it, and just kind of let you know that I won't be going to the theater for quite some time. The theater seats are not the most comfortable. We all know this. I didn't see any films in 3D. I chose not to do that. I'm not a fan of 3D. I'm also a fan of keeping what little money I have in my wallet in there, and that would have just run the prices, through the roof. But it was a difficult adventure to embark upon. The films were not all terrible. I don't think any of them were particularly good. They're just not, in my wheelhouse. I started feeling a bit like, that crotchety old grandfather type. About halfway through, everything seemed really loud. My body was sore. My eyes hurt. Just like looking around at what were sometimes, three-quarters of the way empty theaters, wondering what the hell I had gotten myself into. But it's been something I've been thinking about doing for a while, and I did it, and I'm glad I did it in a strange way. But at the same time, it only went further to reinforce how I already felt about the Hollywood machine and big budget films that are basically churned out to capitalize on already existing ideas and properties. And being a fan of many of the Pixar films, having a child, and I do make note of the fact that the Cars, the original Cars movie, was and continues to be one of my least favorite Pixar films to date, and Cars 2 actually underwhelmed me even more than the original. So that was the real turd of the bunch. Not to say any of them were head and shoulders above it, but the next time I spend any time in a theater will be for a film that I absolutely can't wait to see, and I can't think of anything right now that falls into that category. So just wanted to share that with you before we got into the first film here, which is a 1974 film, and I believe it's still streaming on Netflix. And the name of the film is Wife to Be Sacrificed. And after I kind of go through a little bit of my thoughts on this particular film, I'm going to talk about the genre that this falls into, which is this style of Japanese softcore pornographic film known as the pink film. So before I do that, essentially, Wife to Be Sacrificed follows a young woman, a wife who has charged her husband with sexual battery. He escapes from the police and ends up going into hiding. And after 3 years, she's divorced him and kind of trying to move on. And strangely enough, and sadly enough for her, he returns and kidnaps her and takes him out to this kind of cabin out in the woods. And what kind of transpires from that point forward is a pretty incredible amount of abuse, physical, emotional, sexual, tying her up, humiliating her, and the real strange and disturbing and interesting thing about the path that this quote unquote relationship takes is that the woman actually, I guess you would say, is broken and ends up coming to enjoy these types of behaviors and actions on the part of her husband, and actually ends up getting to the point where her husband can't take the fact that these abuses don't affect her negatively anymore. He's doing this to get off on the pain, the emotional and physical trauma that he's causing her. And when that doesn't happen anymore, hubby doesn't really want to do it. So I bring this film up just because, it's certainly not for everybody. If people have seen Takashi Miike's Masters of Horror episode Imprint, it's kind of harkens back. It's a throwback to these pink films because there is a good bit of torture involved in that film. There's definitely some sexual underpinnings within that, and you kind of feel like maybe Miike was paying homage to these type of films. Now, I will say obviously that this film, Wife to Be Sacrificed, is not what you would call an enjoyable watch. It's more for me is like a curiosity, a very interesting snapshot of a type of film and a type of style that became quite revered in Japanese cinema. And what it is just so interesting and fascinating to think about the type of films that were kind of coming into the major studio system in Japan in the 70s and somewhat in the 80s. But it's just interesting to kind of learn more about this style of film, and Wife to Be Sacrificed is pretty representative of what these things were all about. They kind of first appeared in the 60s, and they were more of, like what are like X-rated films would be in terms of having a niche audience and kind of being hidden in the back alleys, if you will, in those types of theaters. But what happened was actually in the 70s, the Japanese theater system and their major studios were really losing money and losing a lot of their audience. And what happened is they started to produce these pink films, the ones that were kind of, flying under the radar. They started being produced and put into major theaters and by major studios, and kind of would be the equivalent of, you know, something like this being, you know, bought by, I don't know, Warner Brothers, or produced by Warner Brothers and then distributed and finding its way into your local AMC. And the masses ate it up, and it really exploded onto the scene. You know, it was called soft porn, sexploitation, erotica. There was always a good bit of torture, as I said. So there was violence involved in these films as well. But the interesting thing is, with all the extreme kind of content found within these films, Japanese censorship laws, you know, forbid the display of genitals or even pubic hair. And that was, it's just incredible. That kind of precipitated this idea and the need for the Japanese filmmakers who wanted to show quote unquote working parts. They would, you know, do these things that we now see as comical, but they would, you know, position props like candles and lamps and stuff to block the body parts. And also things like, you know, you'd find a black box or a fuzzy white spot, like placed over the genitals. So, that was another kind of interesting thing. But, being that the pubic hair was such a big no-no, one of the really fascinating things about Wife to Be Sacrificed is that there's actually a scene in the film as part of the torture where the husband shaves the wife's pubic hair, and that was a means to be able to display more of those nether regions, I should say, without angering too many people. And the lead actress, and I'm never gonna, well, her name isn't that tough, I guess, Naomi Tani, hopefully I'm saying that right, the lead actress in Wife to Be Sacrificed, who was born in 1948, so was 26 at the time of filming, she became quite popular in this pink film genre, and she was not very interested or intrigued by the prospect of doing these types of films. But what happened was she was convinced of the artistic value of the pink film, and coming from a more mainstream traditional film background. She was an actress before she did this. The money was right, so she ended up hopping into the pink film, and she made quite a good living for herself doing these types of films, and also became quite popular and revered. So there's always that. Yeah. So again, 1974's Wife to Be Sacrificed. I streamed it on Netflix. I believe it's still available. It's certainly an oddity, and a really cool, as I said, snapshot at, you know, alternative cinema. And for those reasons, I gave the film a 7 out of 10. So we got to talk a little bit about the pink film. If you go to Wikipedia and look up Wife to Be Sacrificed, as you read down the article a bit, there's a mention of pink film and a link for it. And if you you click on pink film, it'll take you to a pretty cool wiki page where you can read and hear all about that. So that was Wife to Be Sacrificed, and I have one more film for you, and we'll be right back with that. Hey guys and gals, do you like movies? Well, I sure do. There's nothing like going to your local multiplex and dropping 10, 12,
Hell, even $15 on the latest blockbuster. What could be more enjoyable than sitting in a really uncomfortable chair for upwards of 90 minutes, listening to a group of preteens yap, and watching all those wonderful cell phone screens light up around you with each incoming text? $10 for a tub of shitty popcorn? Yes, please. Knowing that we can all count on Final Destination 5 and 3 Hulk reboots in 7 years just gives me the warm and fuzzies. So if you're ever thinking about staying home, where you have a plethora of snack choices, your favorite armchair to relax in, and the option of throwing back a cold one if you so choose, stop. I'm here to remind you that these $200 million films need your support. How else will we be able to keep Will Smith, Angelina Jolie, and Tom Hanks clothed, much less fed? It's the little guys we need to be worried about. The films that are made by real artists with real vision. Those are the people we want to keep our hard-earned dollars away from. So remember, the next time you're contemplating staying home and popping in a DVD of a film that actually requires thought and personal investment, don't do it. Those are the ones you want to be pirating online. Be your own modern-day Robin Hood. Steal from the poor and give to the rich. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll see you at the movies. Hey, welcome back. And last but certainly not least, we're going to go ahead and talk about a 2010 film called Rubber. The tagline, are you tired of the expected? Robert. The tire's name is Robert, and when he comes to and discovers that that he has telepathic powers that allow him to blow people up, well, I guess their heads, he sets his sights on a desert town and starts following a young, mysterious woman. This movie has gotten a lot of praise for being original and quirky and something not quite of the norm, and I agree. It is not quite of the norm, and I don't know what was going on in Quentin Depew, I don't know if that's how you say his last name, the director's mind while he was doing this film, but it would appear to me that he thought that he was pretty damn clever while he was making this film. And you all know that I'm very into subversive, unique, odd, weird cinema. But there was something about Rubber that just didn't sit right with me. In fact, there were a lot of things. You know, a film like Dogtooth, that's really weird and strange and odd and quirky, I can get behind. For some reason, and no, it wasn't because I bought into all the hype, I did not like Rubber at all. It's a short film idea that I feel was stretched almost beyond what's acceptable into a feature-length film. It looks fantastic. It's really well filmed. The sound design is really, really good. I even like the woman who played Sheila, Roxanne Mesquita. She's from a film, Shaytan, that many of you may know, and she's great to watch. And the thing here that really started to bug me was, I mean, I could see, again, like watching a 7 or 10 minute film where Robert kind of rolls down a hill into a desert town, blows up a couple heads, and rolls out of town to a sunset and some, you know, spaghetti Western music. That would have been fine with me. But there's, like, all this meta stuff going on where you have this group of people who are, like, sitting on top of a hill with binoculars watching this all unfold, and you know, police officers and this accountant wandering around, and is this real life? Are they in a movie? Do they know they're in a movie? Do they not know they're in a movie? Some of them do, some of them don't. And it felt to me as if I don't know. It felt to me as if Quentin, because I can't say your last name, I apologize, sir. Quentin seized on a really quirky germ of an idea and, again, stretched it too far and then kind of sprinkled in all these other, you know, elements to try and lengthen it and almost to show, like, how smart he was and how creative he was. And for me, the dialogue and the actions of the people on the outside of the snow globe looking in didn't seem smart or funny or interesting in any way, shape, or form. It literally took me about 10 minutes into this film before I was completely bored out of my mind. And the only thing that stopped me from turning it off several times was the curiosity in anticipation that it was going somewhere. And it just, I mean, and I don't mean this as a joke at all, but I don't really know how else to explain it. It just spun its wheels for its entire runtime. I mean, 82 minutes of following this tire and watching these people follow this tire and watching actors portray law enforcement officers who may or may not be in on the joke or fact that this is a film. So I'm sure I'm gonna, you know, meet with some adversity and differing opinions here, and that's fine, and you know, I welcome all that. And if you do want to chime in on Rubber, it's theconduit@gmx.com or anything else. But this film, aside from the fact that I will give the writer and director Quentin you know, some props for really being able to craft a fantastic looking film, this for me is a story like Treevenge, which you know, had the sense to know what it was going after, that it was going to be a 16-minute short film. You know, Jason Eisner knew exactly what he wanted to do and how it could be done. I don't think or believe that Treevenge could ever be a feature-length film. That being said, if it were, I don't think it would be done quite the way that Rubber was done, with all this, you know, outside looking in stuff. As far as I'm concerned, you know, Rubber is decently acted by everyone involved. It just seems like everybody was uncomfortable with what they were being asked to do. And, you know, I hate this kind of stuff because I ask for, you know, unique and out there, off the radar film. And then something like this comes along and it's just too small and too much of a one-trick pony to build a strong feature-length narrative for. So I'm going to give Rubber a 2 out of 10. I absolutely do not recommend this, but I know a lot of you have seen it, want to see it, and will see it. So I'll be curious to hear what people are thinking of this after the podcast. I know what a good number of people have thought about this up till, but it just didn't do much of anything for me. So with that being said, I know we had a pretty short episode here, but I covered what I wanted to cover, and I'm hoping to get on a more regular schedule soon. Maybe Michelle can get that segment over to us, hint, hint, and check us out over at theconduitspeaks.com. And again, if you wanna shoot me an email at theconduit@gmx.com, we can also do that. And until next time, take care and see you later. Bye. All views and opinions expressed on the Conduit Cast are the views and opinions of the Conduit Cast. So please, if you have different views and opinions, don't be concerned, because again, the views and opinions expressed on the Conduit Cast are simply the views and opinions expressed on the Conduit Cast.